Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Survivor specialists are back! Yes! Welcome to another season of the Survivor Rewind. I'm one of your hosts, McKenna Feeney. As always, joined by the one and only John Millsap. John, how are you doing today?
I'm great. We have a new Survivor season to talk about. We have old seasons of Survivor to talk about. You don't have to talk about Big Brother today. What a fantastic time.
What a day. But, you know, if you want to listen to Blake and I watch, discuss Big Brother, you can do that on Mondays and Thursdays. Anywho, we are talking Survivor Rewind. If you're new to this show, what we do over here on the Survivor Rewind is we pick outwit, outplay, outlast moments for the season, and we relate them for the episode, and we relate them to past season's moments. So John and I will each pick a moment. If you see on the thumbnail, typically the people we put on the thumbnail relate to some sort of discussion that we're going to have today. they're not the guests, unfortunately, though we would love to have Natalie Tenorelli, Roger, or Sue as a guest. But, I mean, Roger might be a little ghosty at this point. anywho, we also then deep dive an episode that we think this episode of 47 mostly relates to over on the Patreon. So that will be the premiere of Redemption Island. I know this is really dragging you guys over to become a patron, but John and I have a really good discussion on Redemption Island, and we are ready to dive into this.
We sure are. This is, before we get going, McKenna, what were your impressions of the premiere? Like, how are you feeling about 47 as we get started here?
47. I'm excited for it. I was more hype on this premiere than last premiere, but at the same time, I feel that something is missing with Andy staying. I feel like Andy, for my like enjoyment, would have left this episode because we've seen things like this in the past happen, and it's never good to keep them around, and like they just haven't learned that. And I get that John was strategic, but everyone is strategic, so what is one more episode? And I get also that leaving, you know, that person around, like a David Wright, one more episode and he is all the way at the end. So I understand both lines of thought, but for my satisfaction of the premiere, it would have been Andy going home.
I get that. I'm kind of fine with them not kind of, you know, someone having their worst day, as I think Blake put it on the Wednesday recap. Like, this is Andy's worst day, and it happens to be the third day of Survivor. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? It's cool if, like, we give him a bit of a reset, see what happens. I'm glad he gets that opportunity to work it through. But overall, like, this premiere, I had mixed feelings on it. And it's not that I didn't enjoy it. I did enjoy it. I'm watching Survivor. Of course I enjoyed it. But like you said, it felt like something was missing. And for me, it wasn't quite like the vote. It felt like there was a lot of idol hunting and not enough getting to know the characters. And again, we're on a 90-minute, or we're on a two-hour premiere. Mm-hmm. And there are some people in this season that I felt like we didn't see at all. Like
100%. Caroline?
Yeah, right. Like, there are people who, like, yes, are technically in the episode, but I didn't feel like I got to know anything about them. Yes, yeah. They had the, like, one scene, but other than that, we didn't get a lot. But as things are getting going, I'm really hopeful for this season. I think if this first episode is any indication, we have some pretty, like, bad game players on this season. And I've been an advocate so many times. Watching Big Brother this summer has just reinforced the idea. I love seasons with just a bunch of people who don't know the game, or they don't know the game and are really bad at the game in practice, because it makes it more entertaining, in my point. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some people on this cast who I think really know this game well. Obviously, like Teenie and Asia show that in this episode. Like, Teenie just being like, no, we're waiting till Asia gets back before we make our majority alliance. And Asia just, like, skillfully navigating conversations and, like, again, making a majority alliance. Mm-hmm. There are definitely people who do know the game, but it feels like the vast majority of people are like, I'm going to go do crazy stuff. And I love that. And I really hope that just continues to be the direction we go for this season.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there are some things that I'm just, like, so confused about. What are these tribe names? Because I could not figure them out whatsoever.
It was Tuku, Lavo, and Gata. And this is also something that I wanted to bring up before we really get talking into our last moments, is tribe names. Like, when watching Redemption Island, I felt the camaraderie or the band together of Zapatera, Ometepe. Like, these felt like tribe names that I will, like, remember and know. And Tuku, Lavo, Gata just does not feel like, I don't have a connection to that. Like, I don't feel like a camaraderie with these tribe names, because it just feels like they're four letter names and they keep switching out some letters here and there.
Yeah, I feel very similar, and it didn't help that it kind of sounded like Gata. I was like, okay, I think I got that one. And it did help that the first challenge had like the names of the tribes on the nets, and that reinforced the tribe names on me. But like, Tuku sounds so similar to so many tribe names we've had in the past.
Tuku has Taku, Lavo, Luvu.
Yeah.
And Gata, was it Gota? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
and now I've used the power of the internet to figure out that Gata is Fijian for snake, Lavo is Fijian for money, and Tuku is Fijian for let go, according to the internet. So
okay.
Take that with a grain of salt. However, what do those have anything to do with each other? Like,
the snake lets go of the money.
Yeah,
and sure. It's the rat's turn. It's the rat's turn. That's what it is.
There we go. We figured it out. But I don't know. It does feel like I'm going to refer to this as the red, yellow, and blue tribe for most of this season.
Yeah. I feel like that's what we do in the new era anyway. It's like such based on tribe color rather than tribe name. And I know a lot of people in the community don't remember tribe names, but that is like one of the things that I like to remember is the tribe names. So like when I'm calling them red, yellow, and blue, like I feel like there's something to be said about like these tribe names.
Yeah. Now that being said, in the new era, we tend to have that one tribe that sticks out that we do remember the name of the entire time. Obviously like Tika because of like Lulu, that whole thing, yeah. Lulu, right? Like they do stick out. So it'll be interesting to see who in this season is the one that really sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we're just being a little like pedantic about these tribe names to start and give it a week or two. And it'll be like, yes, okay, never mind. Mm-hmm. These are well-defined tribes and I will remember these names for time like unsaid.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get into our outwit, outplay, and outlast moments of the episode. For outwit, we're talking age gap alliances. And John, why don't you start off with yours first? Because you have the earlier version. So like, talk us through the early strategies of like, I guess, an age gap alliance.
Yeah. So of course, when we're looking back at the premiere for this week, this is really like Gabe who comes onto the island and is like, oh yeah, I want to seek out working with the oldest person here, and find Sue and decides to work with Sue. That is kind of the driver behind what this moment is for us. And it really gives us this opportunity to kind of look into the evolution of this like cross-generational alliances that we see through Survivor. Because it feels like at this point, it's really evolved. It's not like we're at the point now where we're like trying to evoke these ideas of, oh, I'm like a son slash daughter to this mother slash father. And like, that's what the relationship is based on. Instead, it feels like this is a strategic thing because I feel like the oldest person is, what did Gabe say? I feel like the oldest person is just going to have some experience that I don't have that's going to help me in the game and give me a different way of approaching the game. Smart. To using resources like that. But so I want to go throw it all the way back. I want us going all the way back to the Australian outback, in fact. And I want to talk about like Roger and Elizabeth, where this was that cross-generational alliance, but it's solely based off this idea of, you know what, you kind of remind me, like you feel like a daughter to me. And this is this basis of this relationship as it started back in Survivor, when Survivor was more social experiment and less game. Because like, I think it's impossible for us to deny in the new era, Survivor is much more of a game than it is a social experiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Roger and Elizabeth. They are just so wholesome. And like, you can tell that they're aligned just because they love each other and have like that bond where it there isn't anything strategic, because you have Roger being like, you know what, vote me out before Elizabeth, So yeah. Like, you could just tell that these people are aligned because they've bonded, rather than like, oh, this seems like the strategical advantage if I align with Elizabeth or Roger.
Yeah, and that's the fascinating thing about these early relationships when we're looking at these cross-generational things, because it's people who are just stepping out of their everyday American life and are trying to find that familiarity again. We find, like, there are a lot of reasons why people can connect in the early days of Survivor, and you kind of glom onto whatever it is. Like, we even see when TK comes back to camp, like, there's that fear of, like, the bromance forming. Yep. And, like, that, those are the type of initial connections we see early in Survivor. So when you get this, like, type of familial connection early on in these early seasons, it just ends up being a strategic alliance later on, because these people enjoy spending time together and, like, talking to each other. And it makes it so that they can discuss the game and work together as the game progresses. And it's not, like, there's no coincidence that we saw this so many times in early Survivor. Like, yes, we're talking about Roger and Elizabeth, but we see it again two seasons later with Pascal and Nalia. And it continues to happen the further and further on we get. But there's kind of the shifting point where it becomes a little more strategic, right, McKenna? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Like, obviously, we have Malcolm and Denise, right? I think everybody has talked Malcolm and Denise to death. So we wanted to try and find a different pairing. So we went with Boston Rob and Natalie from Redemption Island, where he purposefully kind of picks the younger girl to mold and, you know, move forward in the game. And she kind of looks at him like he's a returning player. He's got the strategy and the know-how to move me forward. So, like, it's less of a, you could be my father, rather than a, I mean, he's only 15 years older than her. So, like, there's no, like, anywho. Then, like, oh, he's, like, wiser and knows a little bit more about the game than I might.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing is, when we look at the older relationship to the younger person, and again, going back to what Gabe said about just, like, Sue having more life experience and being able to look at the game differently, Rob has arguably more life experience, has more life experience, even only being 15 years later, just from playing the game three times beforehand. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's a very different situation. And yes, this is kind of the way Rob approaches all of his seasons, right? Like, he goes for that younger, picks up the younger girl and like walks her through. He was doing that back in Marquesas. He did it, obviously, he did it in All Stars and like continued doing it the further on he goes and plays. The interesting thing with this is Rob also goes the other way in Redemption Island as well.
He takes the oldest man in Philip as well. So it's really interesting. We're really talking about these age gap alliances because we have Gabe and Sue here on the blue tribe. And Gabe is like, all right, the oldest woman, I'm going to align with her. I think she's going to be really great, really steady for my game, where I might cause a little bit of chaos. She can be like more of a steady force. And, you know, we have Rob going with Philip here, but that is not the case in like a steady, like, confidant. Philip is a little bit more off the rails and has like, it plays more emotionally. So Rob can manipulate Philip's emotions a little bit. So he kind of goes both ends of the spectrum and he's just like sitting in the middle. And then that winds up as the final three.
Yeah. And it's really interesting you mentioned the steady thing, because Phil and Blake mentioned it on Digging Deeper this week too. This idea of having that steadiness could kind of like break some of these. We've seen a lot of breakdowns from players in the early days of the game for the new era. Like, it's just been a constant at this point that someone is breaking down in these first few days. And I think like production kind of, I think like there's a side of production that really likes that, because it like proves how tough the game is and everything like that. But you don't see it as often in the earlier games when you had these more steadier, older players on the cast. And Phil and Blake kind of talk about how the, like, that blue collar older man, like a Terry Dietz type, mm-hmm. or like an Andrew Savage type, is really working there to, and like gives a presence to a tribe that prevents that from happening. And we see Gabe intentionally like seeking that relationship out with Sue.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think it'll, they, in a younger, older alliance always provides a really good dynamic to the game where you have just very two different views on what mm-hmm. might want to, what should happen in the game. And they kind of like talk it out and come to a consensus together. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how Gabe and Sue handle the rest of the game, because we didn't really get much aside from the idol hunting between mm-hmm. the two of them.
Yeah, I think it's just for a long time, like it's been pretty proven at this point, this type of alliance is very beneficial to have. And I think, it, like you said, it is because of those, just because of the fact that there are differing views from age gap, and like having that there makes it so people have to think through things and don't become impulsive and decide, hey, I don't like the fact that my name's the decoy vote, so I should push back against it by getting the decoy vote to be someone else.
Yeah.
And they get themselves voted out.
Brian says here, Sue seems to have a good social game. And that's true, because you also have Genevieve wanting to work with her as well. Mm-hmm. I think it was Genevieve wanting to work with her as well.
No, it was Caroline.
Caroline. Because Genevieve's on red.
Genevieve's on the red, on the Lavo tribe.
Okay. Caroline wanting to be like, yes, we're working together. Mm-hmm. I like your vibe. So like, I think Sue is in a good spot. She has like that Denise upside where like Russell was like, I'm gonna work with you, Denise. Malcolm was like, I'm gonna work with you, Denise. And then she obviously succeeds. So
yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense to me. What's our outplay moment?
Outplay, we are doing some running through the jungle this week. I don't know, we've done it in a bunch of New Era seasons before, but for some reason this running through the jungle hit different. It gave me like more of an old school vibe. And I don't know, it just, because it had like three different tasks you could choose, and like, I don't know, there was like a little bit of hidden secrecy with like what tasks you were able to do. It wasn't run around the beach like we've seen in 42 and grab oars. I don't know. John, what were your thoughts on like the running through the jungle and like it being just feeling different?
Yeah, it felt really old school. And I think a lot of it, part of it, I think has to do with the fact that it didn't start on the beach and it was kind of in that like clearing instead. And mm-hmm. it felt like, I don't know why that clearing just felt a little different. For some reason, it felt different than the normal clearing that we see for immunity challenges. I think it's like the fetch quest into the jungle that really evokes yeah. those old school feelings. I think we just think back, and even when we were doing research for this, like these challenges aren't that old school as we remember. We just kind of associate it with the old school more mm-hmm. than not. Because this specific challenge was what, first seen in A Moment I'm Going to Bring Up, and then like we see it again in like Vanuatu,
yeah,
and like every few seasons, and then it hasn't been until this new era that we have been seeing it consistently.
Yeah, we've seen it basically every new era season, but I'm going for not this specific challenge for my moment, but I'm taking it all the way back to our Lord and Savior Borneo, and I want to talk about the where they have to pick their like lightest player and they simulate a plane crash. So they're parachuted in the woods and they have to try and find them in the woods and then bring them on a stretcher and navigate them through the challenge where like they have to run out into the woods and find a person dangling, you know, with a parachute.
Yeah, obviously Survivor was a lot different in Borneo. And yes, the premise of what is modern day Survivor is there back then, but the challenges in specifically way different in Borneo. And
oh, for sure.
This is a time where you have uneven challenges where it's just like, nah, no one's sitting out, just keep going. Like, whatever your tribe is, your tribe goes. I think this is something that we don't see very often anymore. I can't remember. When was the last time we even saw a challenge where they had to pick the lightest person?
Cook Islands, where they were throwing like Becky around and Candace around, where they had to like loop through the ropes, where like they, one person was attached to the ropes.
And I feel like, and maybe it's, I just can't remember like what order I'd watch seasons. We used to have older ones where like, I'm pretty sure Pearl Islands has a season where they have to like, or Pearl Islands definitely has challenge where they have to like, they have the person suspended over the water and they have to hold them up.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Survivor kind of moved away from those things. I think it's probably a safety thing in all honesty. Also probably like, to avoid like touching people that you don't have to touch, but like I get it.
Yeah.
But I understand it. It's just like those are kind of some of those old school vibes that I miss. And like the wild thing about this original Borneo challenge is they had to build their stretchers, they had to take their stretchers, they had to get the person down and then run them back to the beach. Again, this is terrifying. Like think about doing this in 2024.
But I love that there's a story to this challenge. It's called Rescue Mission. They're simulating a plane crash. Like there's a story to this challenge rather than just like, go get the thing, bring it back, and do the puzzle.
Yeah. No, I agree.
In this case, the thing is a human.
Yeah, the thing is a human and bring them back. And it's all fun. It's all fun and games, right? It's just Survivor.
Yeah.
But that also emphasizes the name Survivor. And like that is what was so nice about the Borneo challenges. They were so thematic around the name Survivor.
Yeah. So you're talking about the first iteration of this specific challenge.
That's right. Like this challenge, Jungle Relay. There are two specific iterations of this challenge. There's the one that we saw in this week's episode where you run into the jungle, you get puzzle pieces, you bring them back. And you build a puzzle. That's more the newer one. It kind of alternates a little bit, like, but that's what we saw in Koh Rong. That maybe that's not what we saw. Maybe we saw the other iteration in Koh Rong. But that's what we saw in Gabon, except it was like a flagpole or whatever it was instead, which essentially is just a puzzle. And the other version, the original version of this challenge, going all the way back to Survivor Marquesas, is you run into the jungle, you collect a couple of ores, you run out to the beach, you paddle your boat to do something, you bring it back to the beach, and then do whatever else ends the challenge.
Yeah.
And this is an iconic moment in Marquesas, quite frankly. Like, this challenge is the one where Rotu thinks they win, but they didn't follow the rules properly. John Carroll's like super eager to win and just like continue decimating Mataamo. And they get their oars, they paddle out, they do that, they come back to the beach, they pull their boat up, they run, and they put the flag in. But John puts the flag in before the general gets there with the tiki, which is not allowed. The rule was everyone had to be there before you put your flag in.
And then the boat wasn't in the chain length as well. Like, you had to have the boat in, like, the length of where you could hook the chain in. But, like, the boat, Jeff, like, drags the rope out, and it's like, I can't hook this boat. You guys don't win.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to see, like, the difference in this. And I think that is part of the reason why they go to... Vanuatu, I don't think they have to like bring the boat to a specific location. Or at least it's not stated in the rules of the challenge when, as we see it as viewers. But I think that part of the reason they go to the puzzle, because like it's kind of hard to mess up where you're supposed to bring a puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think this is overall, like this, we should have more running through the jungle where like, even in the premiere of Philippines, they run into the jungle from the beach and then they have to go through obstacles to try and get puzzle pieces, where like if we get some more of that, like, I feel like I want this challenge more, but I don't really want the boat part of it. I'm like over boats.
Is that because of the boats in this premiere and them flipping over? Because for some reason they gave them the smallest boat possible for six people and two chests or three chests.
Well, they all had to be in the boat just to start.
That's true. However, these boats seem like the easiest boats in the world to flip over.
Listen, I'm no boat expert, but you ready to go to Outlast now?
Yeah, let's talk Outlast.
All right, Outlast, we're going with risky idols. We had this risky idol in a few seasons here now. Like, we had the birdcage. Now we have this, we had a different box last season. Now we have another version of the box and like this multi-layered version of an idol where you can extend it. So we have a few examples that kind of navigate that a little bit better.
So I want to talk about this specific iteration for a first point, because it, to me, and like, this is a wild thing to say on our Survivor podcast that we say wild things about a lot. I think production's listening to the fans. Because for so long, after the whole like Samoa of it all, and idols became like findable without clues and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
There has been that outcry from the community being like, we want the idol hunt back. We want it back. We want to see people like go for idols and have to work for them. I think it was more of like a complaint once we got to like Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, and like that, like the late 30s, I think, is where it really got exasperated. And there were just so many idols out there, and it felt like someone was finding an idol every single episode.
Yeah.
So it feels like production's listened. And like production's like, you know what? We do miss the idol hunt. We do miss seeing people do things, because these boxes are hidden underground. You're not finding them without the clue.
Yeah.
And of course, like the beware of it all, like, again, like just the mechanic of the beware advantage in general makes it so that you have to have a hunt. But this is one of the best iterations of an idol I have seen in years, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I love it. I think it's great.
And I think just having it like escalate, and because this is one of those things where it always feels like an idol is just too powerful. And like even last season, right, where everyone has an idol and then you see those idols just, you know, leaving, go out in everyone's pocket. Right. And everyone talked about it on Wednesday in the recap, this idea that like an idol for one tribal council or three tribal councils is so much better than an idol that's good till final five, because you actually use it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't just get voted out with it because you're like, oh, I should hold on to this because it's more powerful later on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. For sure. So, John, your moments are a bit earlier than mm-hmm. mine. So why don't you take your Outlast moments first?
Yeah. And I mean, exactly what I was just talking about, this idea of escalating your idol and making your idol more powerful. And there are a pair of moments that are the same moment, essentially. But it's going back to Ghost Island and David vs. Goliath. So again, production's been like thinking about this type of thing for a while and this mechanic for a while. And we've had these like time limit idols for a bit. But we have Chris Noble in Ghost Island and we have Davey in David vs. Goliath. And both of them have they get an idol and they have an opportunity to progress how long the idol's good for. And Chris Noble, of course, has to go off at night into Ghost Island. And he's like, okay, here's some pots. You got to choose the right one. And if you do, the idol gets stronger by a vote. And Davey does the same thing, right? Like sneaks off at night or to the other side of the beach in David versus Goliath and has to pick the pots. And it's like, okay, pick left or right. If you get it right, you can keep going. If not, too bad, so sad. You lose your vote. And I think the Davey moment's a little more memorable because it has him standing there like asking God for a sign as to which one he should pick. And he like is looking at the fire to see if it goes left or if it goes right so he can choose which one it is. And then it doesn't. And he's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. That is it's a great moment that he's like, players ask for like any signs, like anything from the Survivor gods or whatever. And so having this fire blowing, you know, whatever way, and then like standing still or something like that gives you the knowledge of like, someone is looking out for me. I'm just gonna, you know, keep it as is. I won't be too risky. I won't bite the hand that feeds me.
Yeah, exactly. It's so fun. It's so fun, in my opinion. Like, this is exactly what I want from this. I want there to be risk and reward. And the way that it is approached in 47 is great. The fact that it's like, okay, you have an idol, it's good for one vote. But if you put it down this hole and open this box, it's good for three votes.
Yeah.
And then, and honestly, I thought it was only going to be the two levels. When there was the third level to this idol, I was like, this is amazing. This is so perfect. I love this. Production, you have my praise. You have done correctly with idols. This is, I don't know how you'll ever top this as the mechanic for idols moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Mine, I'm going with more of like the risky business here of like the idol hunt or like the, you know, search where you're having to find this key. You're having to wet the log. And I'm talking Sarah and Vince. They both had to sneak into the other tribe's camp. Vince stole some ashes, I believe, in a water bottle. Tony is putting ashes on Sarah's face to make her blend in. It is just so crazy to have a mechanic for an idol slash advantage to sneak into the other tribe's camp.
Yeah.
And like, what do you do if you get caught? Like, this is so risky.
It's so risky. And it's one of those things where, from our understanding, you don't get the advantage if you get caught. That was the premise of it, right? You just had to steal. Was it for Vince? It was specifically fire. Was it also specifically fire for Sarah?
I don't think so. I think she had to go in and like get something. But Vince, he needed to steal fire, but they didn't have fire, so he put a bunch of like coals and ashes in his like water bottle.
Yeah, and there's also like the moment where he knocks down all the torches, and it's like, oh my god, this is happening. And the funny thing is that we're watching these like midnight excursions or whatever we want to call them, missions in the night. You have to remember, it's pitch black. I don't know, viewers, I don't know if you have ever been immersed in pitch blackness. Like, just go outside where there are no unnatural lights at all. It's dark. It's very dark, and it's hard to see things.
Yeah, so Sarah, she was retrieving the vote steal from the Cele camp.
Right, she had to actually find the advantage itself. Whereas Vince had this silly mission to get fire, which if anyone's awake, they'll be like, oh, why is fire moving down the island?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it provides like a lot more entertainment for us when there's an element of risk or an element of getting caught. You know, we have like Wentworth's idols in Cambodia being at the challenge or in the middle of the shelter. We have like Fiji where it's in the apex, at the apex of the cave and needing to get everybody out of camp. So like anything that we can get that like social dynamic integrated kind of with the strategic is really fun.
Yeah. I mean, even just going back to 44 with the birdcage, right? Like, it's like, oh, it's very evident when you take this at this point. Like, we're going to know when it's opened. And it's, again, that progression of advantages in the game where you're not just gambling your ability to find this and, like, losing your vote, like the Beware Advantage says. There is so much social capital at risk with these idol hunts now. Mm-hmm. Like, even just looking at what happened with Rome on Lavo, right? Like, dude was caught with his I don't
luckily
know.
Luckily, not the water, but.
I don't know if you saw. Rome tweeted he would like his shoulder was submerged in that well in order to get that idol. So, that's the type of risk, right? And we see in the episode where he kind of like books it as everyone comes up. Mm-hmm. And what was he supposed to do? He is soaking wet from literally just being in the well. He's like, hey guys, how's it going? Why are you wet, Rome? Just went for a swim in the well.
I thought I would take a nice dip. It looked enticing.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it puts you in a tough situation. And the beware advantages of these have led to it. Like, that's been one of, honestly, it was funny in 41 when they did the funny phrases and whatever as the beware advantages. The way beware advantages have progressed throughout the new era has been really good, in my opinion. I mean,
42 had Drea like dipping her hand caught red-handed in like red paint or something like that. Like we've had such a good escalation to these things. And I like bringing back the like pouring water onto the wood because we had that in Game Changers with Ty and around the well. So like, I think they're bringing back some mechanics that worked well in the past and like mixing it in with like the beware of it all.
If I have one complaint about these like advantages in 47, like from what we saw in the premiere, it's the discrepancy, like the disparity between the difficulties of Rome getting his and Gabe getting his. Because Rome,
we'll find out what happens with Yellow soon, hopefully.
I'm assuming that's what we'll see next week. But Rome's was significantly harder than Gabe's was, in my opinion. Like, yes, Gabe had to, like, get the key from the cliff, whatever. And that is a camp thing, right? Like, obviously, it can't be the same thing in all of them because they don't have the rock face or anything like that. And there's a risk because it's a pretty obvious thing. Or, you know, smashing a log on another log to break it open. Yeah. That's a loud thing. But Rome literally could have been, like, put the water on that log to get the clue, and someone could have walked up and been like, I guess there's an idol at the bottom of the well.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't 100%. Know. That only complaint about it. Otherwise, I think what production is doing with idols and idol hunts in general is making them more interesting again. I think we're at a point where it's like, okay, I don't need to see five idols get voted out of the game. Like, I could do with less idols. Again, it's one of those things where idols don't have the value they used to have because of the way that people approach them in the game now. Yeah. So I don't need to see that many in the game, but as long as we get these hunts and they're not taking up like 45% of the episode to show that, and you show us the social things that are happening in the game so I know every single player on the season after the premiere, I'll be happy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it for our take on the premiere and rewinding it back to the past. Make sure you check out Patreon tomorrow where we discuss the Redemption Island premiere and how that all relates to the 47 premiere. So that will be a really fun discussion and we hope to see you over there on the Patreon. John, what else is happening the rest of this week?
There is so much happening. Guys, the Specialist channel is exactly where you want to be if you want Survivor content. We have so much coming at you. And not just Survivor content, because we have Big Brother content too. McKenna and Blake still talking Big Brother.
Oh, yeah.
It's never ending. I think you only have 3 weeks left. You're almost there. But like this season keeps delivering, so it doesn't matter. So on Mondays, you'll have a recap from McKenna and Blake. And then right after the eviction on Thursdays, McKenna and Blake are there to break down the rest of the week. This Sunday, Phil will be talking to the one and only Liz Wilcox to do the first predictions and power rankings of the season. That's going to be a can't miss podcast. I know that already. Liz has been wanting to be on the Specialist for a while, and we're very, very happy to have her this weekend. We have the recap every Wednesday after the episode airs. McKenna and I are here for the rewind on Fridays. And then if that's not enough content for you,
and you want to dig a little deeper,
Phil and Blake have Digging Deeper on Thursdays. Phil and I talk movies every second Monday. We just talked about our top 10 island movies this week. And in a week and a half, we are going to be talking top 10 underrated horror movies. Those are fun podcasts. You're going to want to give those a listen to if you like movies. And then we have the Patreon. There is so much Patreon content. And right now is the beginning of the Survivor season. Like, yes, okay, you missed the fantasy game if you want to be a $20 patron. But $20 patrons can still get ready for power rankings because those don't start until next week. So you can still become a $20 patron and join the power rankings game. And then on top of that, we still have Every Season Matters going on, where Phil, Will, and Blake are currently breaking down Palau, I believe. Mm-hmm. Tuesdays, we have $5 Tuesdays, where Phil and I talk a movie from our top 10 lists. Wednesdays, there's the Survivor Rock Draw, where Phil and Will take the ideas submitted by patrons and talk about one of them. On Thursdays, you'll always get Phil's after show. That's a little more uncensored than what we get on the recap, and Phil breaks down the episode a little bit more from his point of view. Phil's also watching Australian Survivor right now. So that comes out on Fridays, and then Saturday, you'll get the Survivor Rewind with McKenna and I, where we will talk about that specific episode this week. We are talking the Redemption Island premiere. So become a patron. You get so much content. And if this isn't enough, you get all of our backlog of patron content too. So there's so much there for you if you become a patron. Make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel so you know when we're live. And McKenna and I will see you next week for another episode of Survivor Rewind.